Ready? Well, good afternoon, everyone. I want to welcome all of you to this Los Animas County Board of County Commissioners acting in the capacity as the Board of Human Services. Today is Tuesday, December 17, 2024. Calling this meeting to order. Please rise for an invocation by Commissioner Luis Lopez, followed by the Pledge of Allegiance by Commissioner Tony Haas.
Heavenly Father, we thank you for the opportunity to gather in your name to do the work of Los Animas County Department of Human Services. In this joyous time of the Christmas season, we ask you, Lord, to reach out over us and give us your blessings. We thank you for your sacrifices. We thank you, Lord, for being born into this world. Please protect the children and our youth of our community and our elderly. And let us not forget and remember those that are no longer with us during this Christmas season. In your heavenly name, Lord, we pray. Amen.
Amen. The United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. We just have a whole bunch of it happens more often than you realize. Yeah.
Now we go back to the audience. Did you guys see us going that way?
Roll call, Mr. Aragon.
Commissioner Haas.
Here.
Commissioner Luis Lopez.
Here.
Commissioner Felix Lopez.
Here. Approval of the agenda. Any changes to the agenda, Mr. Aragon?
Commissioner, just a couple of items. Number two, minutes, if we can, when we get to that table, those items. And I unfortunately omitted, because we tabled last month, I believe October and November, or excuse me, September, October. So we'll get those caught up in the January meeting.
Okay. I think.
Did we get those?
Yeah, I think we're.
I think we're good. We're
I'm
up to date.
Sure, we're caught up. I'm 1 month behind.
Okay. Because I caught something on mine, and I think it was a mistake on my end, but I wanted to confirm. So it's just November then.
I can check. Okay. Check that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Keep us posted. On that note. With that change, commissioners, I'll entertain a motion to approve the agenda.
Move to approve the agenda with those corrections.
Second the motion.
Commissioner Haas?
Yes.
Commissioner Luis Lopez?
Yes.
Commissioner Felix Lopez?
Yes. Before we go to section three, I want to thank you, Mr. Aragon, for the fantastic Christmas celebration that you all put together. It was awesome. Thank you for inviting us. It was one of those evenings that I had an opportunity that represent my fellow commissioners. And it gives us that window that we don't see otherwise, outside of the regular business hours, outside of the whole thing. It was good to see everyone having fun, families, little ones. So thank you, and give your sincere thanks to the rest of the staff. They all did an amazing job. The food was awesome. The entertainment was good. And I think the dance, I wish we would have stayed to do a little bit more, but I hope everybody had the same fun that we did. So thank you. Thank you on behalf of this board.
Sorry, I wasn't able to be there. Too many irons in the fire.
You know, that's understandable. And
apologies. Grandson comes first, so I had to get him on space.
He was dancing with the grandson. Yeah.
There you go.
That is Chad and
Elise. Yeah.
All together. She
does
a wonderful job.
Very good.
Yeah.
Very good. And next year, I think we need to know exactly where to sit at. The Durham camps were the last ones seen, but they were the first ones started. So that was kind of cool. All right. So we come to the part of the meeting that section three, public comment. At this point in time, anybody that's interested to address in addressing this Board of County Commissioners, this would be the time to do so. Anyone online and or anyone here? Here and then, we're going to go to Section 4, Director's Report. Good afternoon, once again, Mr. Aragon.
Commissioner, so I'm going to try and keep this as brief as possible, and I apologize again if I'm battling a bit of a cold, so speaking, my throat kind of comes in and out in my voice. So the primary piece I want to update is on the CCAP program. As last month, I updated concerns regarding funding concerns with that program. the JBC held a hearing yesterday morning from 9 to 11, which I was a part of and listened into regarding the Colorado Department of Early Childhood presenting in that hearing, specifically regarding UPK and CCAP and the funding concerns. Additional in your packets this month, I've included updated information with projections on our current census versus the overage in spending that we're projected to look at, and then ultimately some updates on rule that's coming with this. So in the hearing yesterday, a couple of things to point out that there are two funding gaps that exist within the program that we've identified. There is the audit findings, which is that the provider rates traditionally have been underpaid towards our care providers. Part of the audit found that because of this, it is very difficult, and I'm sure Commissioner Luis Lopez knows this being on COG, to keep care providers in the early learning centers because of the rate of pay that can be paid versus those that are in the Medicaid healthcare side of the house. What we find is most staff end up leaving the early learning centers or the childcare facilities to go to the other side because there's higher wages available in that realm. And so the turnover is extremely high within many of our early learning centers and our childcare facilities throughout the state. The second portion of the funding crisis comes from the new federal rule implementation that starts effective July 1 of 2026. That new federal rule creates a gap in funding that's outside of the provider rate increases that is now at the county as level as well. The projected shortfall for the state of Colorado with that new federal rule creates a $170 to $180 million gap in funding on top of the provider rate gap that exists at this point. The current request from the CDC department to the JBC was for $11 million. However, we will see that is primarily because they still have some ARPA funds that will sunset now in June of 25. When that sunsets, we will go from $11 million on the request to a $9 million request through CDEC, which means that that's about a 9% drop in allocation between this year and next. So we're not only going to see the funding gap increase in these two areas, but we're going to see the decrease in the allocation amount because of that. The new rule centers around subsidies for CCAP, aligning the provider rates. It's prospective pay upfront. So again, in the past, we've reimbursed providers for the number of days attended. We now have to prepay the providers each month. Whether the child attends or not, which is how we traditionally pay, we no longer have that option. So we prepay based on the census and the full month to the provider. There is also mandatory fees that are going to be associated in the new rule, which are going to be applied to this. And again, the increase to the provider rates that the audit findings had. So those are the four areas of the funding gap that we're looking at. There's also a requirement to reduce our co-payments for parents down to 7%. That is about a $10.3 million new cost associated with the program statewide. We also had to meet the mandate of online applications, which we already do. And then the other piece, the fourth piece, is the slot contracts requirement. Right now, we have to meet that we are primarily serving the underserved, that the underserved are within geographic or economically isolated counties, and that we increase our contracts for IDD and youth with needs. So those are the areas that CCAP and the CDEC have been tasked with meeting requirements with the new federal rule.
So what was the feedback from the joint budget committee on all the hearings? I mean, you're talking about the budget set already for 2025, but knowing the gap that's going to come on 2026, what was their response? I know they're receptive, but is there an opportunity for them to actually put some real money behind this problem?
So let me go into what stabilization looks like. with this program per state rule, counties cannot be, so there is a piece of the state rule for CCAP that actually protects the counties, and that is that we cannot be forced by the state to pay beyond the allocation amount. The problem becomes that the minute that a county says we can no longer fund this program, the state retracts that program back to the state level and takes it away from the county. That does not offset the MOU requirement to date. The rule does not, to my understanding, does not offset that. So the counties would still be on the hook to fund the MOE portion if the state does in fact take back the control of the program. But the state would be responsible for the additional funding beyond the allocation amount to cover that cost.
Now you'd be on the hook for the whole thing.
With that?
You'd be on the hook for the whole thing, pretty much, if
Well,
you're
the
not going to.
state is. The state is beyond the
But the
allocation
MOU,
amount.
we're
Well,
still
the
down a
MOE is
percentage.
only to the allocated amount. It's
Okay.
not to the beyond amount. So whatever allocation amount we would have funded for that year based on the allocation is what we would still
And if
pay.
they remove it, then what?
And if they remove it, then it's on the state completely.
So what would happen? I mean, that brings kind of an interesting scenario. What would happen if
Best off opting out.
if all the counties kind of
Well,
work?
part of the problem is that we still have two other TANF programs that tie directly into this. So the realistic aspect of the state taking this program back is very unlikely. It would upset the process with TANF. So what we're looking at is a couple of things, and I provided a one-pager kind of a breakdown for the board to look at the overview of the concerns. You'll also see that there was a letter that I have submitted to Representative Ty Winter for the 47th District. Mr. Winter's office has responded. They are establishing meetings directly with Dr. Lisa Roy, the director of CDEC, along with the CCAP and UPK staff. We also held a meeting with the state office last Friday and had our COG provider there to discuss the concerns regarding the low reimbursement rate of UPK, which has caused part of this concern because we are not able to draw down effectively the full amount that UPK is, was to offer. So we went through that process with them. There were many items that were identified that CDEC is now going to have to work with our local providers throughout the state to identify whether or not they are in fact obtaining the UPK reimbursement they should be, and if not, why and how to correct it. That has not been done to date, is my understanding. So with that, in your packet, I also provided updates to the overage or expenditures beyond the allocated amounts. You'll see that in there, there's a summation page that in fiscal year 24-25, based on the current census, we would be looking at about a $181,000 beyond the allocated amount. In 25-26, about 236,000, and in 26-27, about 311,000. So a total for 3 years projected about $730,000 above the allocated amount in the program with the current census. Again, we're not pitted to age any youth out, one in 26, one in 27. So that really does not reduce that number significantly. So the question then becomes, what do counties do next? If the state cannot force a county to spend beyond the allocated amount and the state is not looking to pull that program back, and that was some of the comment from the JVC commissioner to your question. I think also JVC's questioning was very specific around how did this audit finding not get caught early on? Why was this not a concern in the past? And ultimately, if the state did have to be on the hook for this, what are the recommendations? As of yesterday, I don't believe there was any resolution to that. So what my understanding from the JVC is that they will be reviewing this and ask for several clarification factors from CDEC on both CCAP and UPK. It was brought up about UPK reimbursements not being adequate and what the plan was for that program as well. So I think before JVC makes any determinations as to what they're planning to do with CCAP, they want clarifying information from CDEC before they do so.
With the overage between the UPK, CCAP, I mean, with the underfunding that they have in there, I know the JVC probably is saying, yes, we would, but then you're looking at $1 billion that they're dealing with in 2025. Who knows what that's going to look like in 2026? So I think at this point in time, it's going to be promises that we will work on it. And the letter that you sent to the representative, much appreciated, but how many other regions? I mean, he's going to be addressing 9 counties. How many other representatives will bring this to the table and push for what is right for the departments to provide the services that constituents?
So a couple of updates to that. There are, to my knowledge, there are counties within each region who are submitting similar letters to the JVC, either through their reps or directly to the JVC. There's been a lot of meetings outside of the hearing yesterday to brief the JVC on the concerns, is my understanding, and that the reps from the other counties are continuing to sit at the table to have these discussions. I think it's a matter of priority and funding. We have determined that there is a large sum of money on the request for funding for UPK. However, the question is, why are we funding a program that's not adequately reimbursing our providers at this point, when we should be looking at that $100 million move to a program that does? The side effects of the UPK funding only impacts youth ages 4 and up. That means everyone ages 0 to 4 will be out of any type of option for childcare or early learning options. Additional to that, with the CDEC group, we met on Friday with the provider. We also had 2 reps from 2 other counties in our region. One from out east, well, both are from out east. One's in our southeast region, one is north. They are also looking at their primary provider having to close due to the CCAT funding concerns. So CDEC is aware of that, and it is my understanding that that information has also been communicated with the JVC at this point.
Unfortunately, the combination of the two, those cuts for Huerfano County for the Council of Governments Early Learning Center, it was enrollment and the cuts to combine that and staffing, and it was a perfect storm. They had no choice to make the recommendation to the board to close that facility. Our recent health department meeting that was brought up by our Huerfano County representatives to that board, and the La Vida region is now opening a brand new child care facility, and they have no idea how they're going to fund it now.
Yeah, part of the problem is that if they're not state certified, they don't qualify for CCAP. The next piece of that puzzle is because, and I was aware, so we had COG at that meeting specifically because of the closure in Huerfano County. I was made aware of that last month, that was a possibility. It's unfortunate, and it was a perfect storm, and unfortunately too late for us to intervene. You know, I've been pontificating on this subject for the last quarter of this year, and it's gotten to a point now where I don't know if we are going to see any resolution at the state level with this. I'm not sure what we're facing. I think some other important factors to consider is that in that packet, I also included a copy of the reduction in the TANF reserve funds due to the TANF reserve at the state level and the current funding. It is a concern that the state has increased the TANF reserve. So we, when I came in 2020, had a cap of $366,000. I believe as of 25, Los Angeles County has now dropped down to 298 as our cap. So we have lost essentially almost $70,000 in TANF reserve in the capacity that we can put money into that. Additional to that, when we look at the CCAP program, there is ability to move those TANF reserves from the county level. Again, those are funds that we primarily use to stabilize. Right now, it was originally projected from CDEC that the counties would exhaust their reserves within 2 to 3 years. With the current expenditure cuts, we're actually looking at counties exhausting their reserves within a year timeframe, which means that those funds will deplete to almost nothing. coupled with the increase to the basic cash assistance under our Colorado Works program, it is the perfect storm for an absolute funding nightmare at the county level across the state. So I will continue to meet. I have several meetings that are being scheduled with Representative Winter's office, along with CDEC. I'll be attending all of those meetings as well to identify. And then there is still a collective effort from the Colorado Department of Human Services Directors Association, CHSDA, to continue to work with the JBC to find an alternative funding source. The request that I made was that they look at moving $100 million from UPK, since we know that right now it is underfunding providers, to a program that can provide the funding to providers. Again, it's about priorities, and it won't fill the entire gap, but it will lessen the blow at the county levels when we get to the allocation amounts.
Well, I think the makeup of the JBC is probably to our benefit, because the majority of these senators, I mean, you have four Ds and two R's, but nonetheless, a lot of these represent Senator Senzinger. You know, I mean, these are kind of the metro areas. So I'm hoping that they're going to go back and have a continued consideration of kind of an interim consideration for additional funding. And also from the CCI, I hope we're going to be sending a letter as well on behalf of the entire.
My understanding is they have, or they are,
okay,
sending a letter. They are just as engaged as CHSDA and some of the county directors. I am primarily, according to Sarah Dawson at the state, the CDEC, who is the director of CCAP. And I do have to give Sarah a lot of credit, as she has been advocating, her and Mary Alice Cohen, for the JBC and the state to identify how to assist counties in this matter. That has been the primary focus, is how do we lessen this blow? She is newer to the department, taking over this program, so I feel like she's kind of bitten off a lot she wasn't expecting to chew on, but ultimately she has been advocating on the county's behalf from the CDEC side, and trying to make this as equitable as possible, but it's not an easy fix.
Senzinger had a breakout round table with about 30 of us commissioners, and we did go, you know, into this at length and discussing it. She's going to be able to help us, I think.
Yeah, I pretty much at this point, from Sarah's perspective, I'm the rural representative for the state at this point. Most of our other constituents' counties are from the larger counties. I did plan to bring a policy for freezing the program to the board today, but honestly, I don't want to create any kind of community concern yet, because we don't necessarily know what JVC is going to do. We don't know what UPK is going to look like. And freezing it does not fix the problem. That's the main concern, is that it does not fix the problem. It prevents the problem down the road. But realistically, for us to level out, we'd have to reduce our census by 60%, and we'd only be able to fund about 23 youth based on the current allocation with the reductions. We are currently at 57. So right now, freezing the program just mitigates any new clients going in, but our trend is not new clients going in for that program solely. Most of ours are through either child welfare, or they're through our TANF programming. And those, whether we freeze or not, will still be a required placement once they qualify for those two programs.
But how do you select 23 and divide them?
Exactly.
Who's higher priority then? And then now the community says, well, wait a minute.
Right. Essentially, what we would be looking at is maximum based on the current projected numbers, or the current census, and then projecting what the need is. COG would only be able to obtain about 15 of the 50 seats they have now. We would only be able to fund a portion of the youth club and only a portion of our third provider, which is a private provider. So realistically, we would be at a point where we would waitlist, which gives us more control than a freeze. But those kids would still be waitlisted. And right now, to get to that census with the age out process, we're looking at about 10 years time before we can get those new youth in.
So if there are guidelines in place for the state have to reimburse this stuff and how they're cutting, when is it time to enter into litigation against the state of Colorado from the counties throughout the entire state?
Well, and that's one of the concerns that I expressed to Heather Dorosco, the director of CHSDA, specifically is around what is the legality against the state from the county perspective, but also with the fact that rule protects counties, what is the state's perspective on filing suit against the counties? So we have to prepare for both sides, essentially, is what is the liability?
There's government immunity, of course, you know, at play here. However, you know, when you're going to be held responsible to a board of county commissioners to fund it, and there's no funding available because the state's not going to obligate or allocate their obligation, then where do you start?
Well, and there, what CHSDA right now is doing, and what I expressed to Heather, I think is to identify what other states who have had these similar audit findings are doing. The problem with Colorado is that unlike other states that have had this finding, they are not Tabor states, so TANF is not as, it's not as affected as we are. In those states, they've simply moved money from other programs that are non-necessity to this. In Colorado, because of Tabor, we can't do that. So realistically, it is a muddy mess of tangled wires about 6 feet underground, and somebody's just pouring water in the mud at this point.
It's going to take a few election cycles to straighten this out. And that's the only way to change this.
Now, I have unofficially been informed that new federal administration may not implement the new federal rule or hold accountable states for that at this point. Again, that's only hearsay. I have not actually gotten confirmation on that, but that still does not fix the provider rate issue that we have.
You know, I had a conversation with the CV3 U.S. Congressman-elect. He's going to be joining us either in April. We're going to invite Commissioner Luis Lopez back to join us on that day. April 18th, March 18th, one of those 2 days. So we need to decide and have a roundtable with Los Angeles County, because one of the things that I brought to him is that some of the federal rules that are being imposed are also impacting Colorado, which is what the governor was actually saying, right? Yeah, well, the federal government is actually doing unfunded mandates in Colorado. They go, you're doing it to all the counties. So it's basically a vicious cycle. So we're going to invite him, and I need to send him an acceptance to his invitation. And I think as a new member of Congress, he, along with the Colorado delegation, can create a case on behalf of Colorado, and maybe we just move those a year or two down the road. But we'll send that once we solidify that. Definitely, we want you to be there so you can, all of you, so you can provide feedback to him, because he's going to be working in Washington. So,
and I think it's an important factor to keep in mind that this isn't the only program federally that is coming with an unfunded mandate. I think another program to point out is Adult Protective Services. This discussion has been on the table for over a year that there's federal mandates coming that we comply at a federal level with Adult Protective Services, just as we do with child welfare. Those APS federal rules, it's not a matter of if they will be implemented, it is when. And at this point, the federal government has committed to a $200,000 and some change funding for the entire state to meet the federal mandate of that implementation.
That's all.
$200,000 for 64 counties. So we see where that gap in the funding actually exists and what that looks like. So I think there are many programs that there are federal mandates that are coming down that are completely unfunded or not even meeting the basic needs of the program, and the amount of work that it's going to take to transition to those federal rules is significant, not just for the state but for the county. So we will have to go through a whole new academy, a whole new training process. There will be a whole new system that will have to be developed for record keeping. I mean, this is an extremely heavy ask from the federal government to meet these mandates. And the state is also very concerned about this. So I think the more that we can lobby, not just from the county to the state, but from the county and the state to the federal, is important in the next 2 years, because these mandates are completely unrealistic in many capacities.
Well, and at the end of the day, the translation for a county is we cannot afford it. That's going to be the bottom line.
Yeah.
If we don't have the funds, we don't have the services. And at that point in time, the state will come after counties. Well, wait a minute, you said you would, yes, but a portion of it is what we have the funds for. The community is not going to give us an additional 3-4 mils to support programs. This is just not the time to let me raise your taxes so we can keep the state of Colorado off your back.
Yeah, it's you know, it's an unfortunate position that we are asking our community, which is already impoverished, to become more impoverished with us. I mean, the assessed valuation concerns we have countywide, not just here, but Huerfano County as well. They also lost a ton of money in their assessed valuation. 26, we're waiting for the new property tax cuts to hit from the special session that took place this year. I mean, there's just so many pieces that are going to impact counties in their ability.
We're going to lose some. Assessor gave us a report this morning. We're going to lose some on certain districts of a decrease, but all the school districts and now the bonds are increasing right now. So we're going to have a tax increase in Los Angeles County. There is no decrease there.
And the governor at the CCI address that he did stated that if you can't afford it now, all you got to do is go to your county for a mill levy increase. Or you can put a small tax out on different items and you can fund yourselves.
Yeah.
Again, elections have consequences.
Well, and that's a reality. And this is an unfortunate piece that is going to not just impact our youth and their, you know, I think the hardest part for me as director and as an educator of 23 years now is that we are cutting the opportunity for our youth to actually be successful in their educational pathways as they grow. Our economy is only changed on an economic development level when youth are educated early on about the importance of economic developments and their impact upon the community that they live in. And right now we're cutting youth up to the age of school age, 5 and 6, out of that opportunity. If our early learning center does in fact close because of this, it's a very sad situation, and that our parents are also going to then have to make tough decisions about whether to stay in the in their current employment or leave the employment and the workforce to go back to the home. We do have the ability to do exempt childcare if the facilities are closed, but again, that means we're putting youth into homes with folks that we're paying through CCAP, but ultimately, we don't know. These aren't certified people. These are exempt individuals caring for children throughout the day. We could not have reports in our child welfare of concerns within the home. So we put a lot of risk out there with this.
And on that very scenario, there is a certain amount of liability.
There is.
That I'd rather not, I mean, you never know.
Yeah.
It'd be pretty risky. But on a very, very good note also, thank you. I had a meeting with the BHA, Behavioral Health Representative for the region, and I connected you. Thank you for responding to the individual. Keep their feet to the fire. I asked the question at CCI, and I got a phone call real quick. And so now I have connected this person with about 10 agencies in the Santa Rosa County, and I'm going to follow up with them that they provide the services they said out there that they would. So stay with that, and whatever you can. If you can squeeze water out of that rock, we love it.
Well, Chairman, as I'm looking at the agenda for today, and we approved at the Board of County Commissioners a new legal agreement with our legal counsel. Hopefully, we budgeted enough moving forward for these services because of what we're facing here today.
Legal has expressed her concerns to me about these. I do know, though, that from the CHSDA side, we have tried to start connecting our legal counsels county to county to start looking at what some of the concerns moving forward will be with the CCAP program and what options are available to the counties. So I'm hoping that that will also help. And I think the other thing, like I expressed to both CDEC and to CHSDA, is that there really needs to be an audit to the UPK side. If that funding is there and it's available, why are we not exhausting it? And why are we not providing providers with a rate that could offset the CCAP cost? Why are we not qualifying youth to the point that we should be with UPK at this point? So I will leave it at that because I know we're on a timeline. Any other questions?
No, I mean, but that was, thank you. Thank you. That's those are important facts because at the end of the day, we're all going to get the benefits.
Yep.
Not me. Getting out at the right time. Mr. Lucero, good luck to you, sir.
All right, so we're going to go to unfinished business. I think we have tabled this. Am I correct?
Yes.
Yes, so for the consideration of letter of support, the Commonwealth Companies CHAFRA grant for Trinidad Housing Development, I will entertain a motion to remove from the table this item.
So moved.
Second motion.
Commissioner Haas?
Yes.
Commissioner Luis Lopez?
Yes.
Commissioner Felix Lopez?
Yes. And commissioners, back to the floor for any questions, comments from Mr. Aragon. I think we had an opportunity to meet with the representative.
Right. And thank you, Chairman, for tabling. I was in my executive committee for Front Range Rail during the presentation, but I did have a chance to visit with Director Aragon afterwards and get brought up to speed regarding this project. I had a few questions for him regarding the project. Those questions were answered sufficiently. My concerns were basically the percentage of low-income housing being available out of the 60-some unit, 63 plus parking spaces out of the entire project, and they came down to a 14% or something of the
correct
of the housing development would be available for those subsidies or for those, and also the other questions I had were answered as well. So I have no other questions moving forward. I do appreciate the board giving me the opportunity to review this, and I hope it didn't give a time restraint
No.
for your letter of support moving forward this time.
So just quick update, commissioners. I did speak with the firm before the meeting today, specifically to any updates. The only thing is that the 14% remains, but with the funding under the grant, they've identified that they can actually provide not 34, but 40 units for this build. So that increases the number of available under that 14% as well, because they're able to increase by 6 additional units. So that is one of the only updates I have at this point. But I do see that that's a benefit because it increases the number of available units for that.
And remind us, where is the physical location of this proposed project?
You know, Commissioner, I know it's within town. I want to say it's on the north end, but I don't.
It's on the north side of town.
Yeah, I don't.
They've come before Urban Renewal Authority as well to have a discussion with that board. And since then, they have, I believe, received a letter of support from Urban Renewal. Chairman Grego did that through a poll. We did not have that under consideration on our meeting agenda. Since it wasn't necessary at that time, just the chairman was able to do that. So, and that's why I've had another opportunity to review this organization, the MARC, or the Commonwealth, what they call themselves, I believe is on the north end of town up by the fairgrounds, not specifically up there. So with the revitalization of the community, the fairgrounds and the Main Street grants, we've been moving forward and the new businesses that have opened out there, with one of them being a restaurant and slash bar. Hopefully this might be able to come to fruition and
should
serve that community in that capacity. More neighbors for you, Ms. Lucero. Right.
As long as they got water.
Very good. Any other discussion, Commissioner Huss?
No.
Okay, I will entertain a motion at this time.
Motion to approve the letter of support for the Commonwealth Company's CHFA grant for Trinidad Housing Development Fund.
Second the motion.
Commissioner Haas?
Yes.
Commissioner Luis Lopez?
Yes.
Commissioner Felix Lopez?
Yes. Consideration of caseload counts and activity by program, June, July, and on and on.
Commissioners, and in the interest of time, folks, because we do need to be wrapped up, I know that Ms. Nora has a presentation on the ESS. Ms. Chrissy, do you have any update?
Yes.
Okay. I'll just have Ms. Nora step up because we did want to touch base on our burial program. So I'll allow her to speak real quickly. And then
how about you introduce the new hire, the redhead in the back?
It is a change up. I was like,
Merry Christmas.
I walked in and looked in the office and had to take a double ticket. So is that Jamie back
there? You know, and in the event that any one of you has anything else to do, I just want to thank this moment before you start part of the interruption to really thank Commissioner Luis Lopez. Yeah. This is going to be his last meeting for DHS. And I see happiness, but I see sadness as well, because he has been a tremendous asset to this board. And I tell you one thing, if he's going to be anyone that has asked the tough questions, I really want to recognize him for that. And it has been a pleasure. It has been an honor working with you.
Well, I got some tissue for you if you're sad. I'm happy. I want to hear the horror stories. Thank you.
Very good.
It's been an honor.
Please proceed.
Before I start, I just wanted to let you guys know that our unit has been having issues for 2 days now with the system. So they haven't been able to fully process cases. So in case you guys get a phone call, that's what we're having to deal with. And the state
What's
is
the
working
name of the system?
This is the CBMS system, Commissioner.
Yes, it's not. It's kind of prolonged a little bit longer this time. So we're having issues.
Yeah, you know, the current president of CCI, I think his middle name is CBMS now, because for the last couple of years, every time he gets somebody from the state in front of him, and let me tell you about CBMS, and they're hearing it from every county, and we know that it's a mess, and you're having to keep two systems, and they're not adapted, so thank you for giving us that heads up.
I think one other important piece to identify, commissioners, in case you do have any community feedback. The state of Colorado was recently, last Friday, as a matter of fact, on the NBC Nightly News. It was reported regarding the public health emergency unwind and the Medicaid disenrollment process. There was a spread in the Nightly News that was provided, and the focus was Colorado and the deficiencies in that unwind process. Reported on a family in Denver whose infant was born and disenrolled and has yet to be re-enrolled. And part of the problem is concerns with the state system and the process of timeliness. So I think it is important for our community to understand that these are not local issues with that system. These are state level situations that we cannot control, but our staff does make every effort to try and timely process. And I will say that our data has proven very, very high to the state mandate, and this team has kept up even with these setbacks. But 2 days is an extremely long time for us to go with system updates or system issues that we cannot process these cases. And the reality is the federal clock does not stop ticking because of those outages.
How does Colorado respond? I mean, if we're having problems here, I would imagine this is happening.
It's statewide.
Statewide.
It's statewide. And all counties are impacted by it.
Plus, we're still struggling from the COVID when it ended, the Med. It's people were locked in, so they're no longer eligible for a certain program. And so it's difficult for us to try to explain to them that's why you are still under Medicaid.
No, I think my dad, too, that our system interfaces with your
yes, system. It does now.
So. That's
enough.
Yeah.
It's all interconnected,
they're trying
folks.
To tie them all together, and they try to do improvements, and it would be great if they were smooth, but they're not. So, okay. So on the burial system program, they haven't let us know they're going to change the grant amount. It's still $1,500. You have to be at the time of death. You have to be enrolled in Medicaid and the Adult Financial Program or the Colorado Works Program, one of those three. Medicare Savings Program is not one of them. And I know some of the funeral homes have voiced that they cannot cover burial because they can only bill $2,500. And they've told me that they cannot bill $2,500 for a burial. It costs a whole lot more. So if the client doesn't pick cremation for us on the application saying they want cremation, they want burial, and they try to apply, they will not be eligible.
Won't pay it out.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's also important to identify that they must have been on Medicaid prior. So what we also find is a lot of families with parents or grandparents who have passed that were not on any kind of Medicaid or Medicaid service. And unfortunately, unless they're on that program, we are not as a county authorized to provide burials. So then it comes to my desk as whether or not to provide that as a general assistance payment. And that's why we budget for GA out of county.
Yeah, didn't we increase that fee? It was $500 6 years ago.
It's $1,500. We cannot, the county cannot, they cannot claim a higher amount than the state's reimbursement, which is still at $1,500. So until the state increases that, we cannot increase that anymore. So unfortunately, even with our providers, our two funeral homes in town that make that request, it's still not enough to cover the cost, even for cremation, realistically, is not a sufficient reimbursement.
And the issue too, it's not an issue, but part of the program is we also look at the resource at the time of death. So depending how many resources they had, we deduct that off the 1500. So sometimes they're not eligible for it. And also
their assets.
Right.
Yeah.
And also if, for instance, somebody lent them some money to pay the bill, we cannot reimburse. So that makes them ineligible.
Just spend all the money before we get a bit older.
Well, the thing about it is that a lot of people do have a burial plan for the fact when they do a spend down. So we advise them to do a burial plan. So that's a good thing, you know.
Yeah, but, 10 bucks a month is not that expensive.
Yeah.
Getting burial insurance.
But for us, it's decreased the request for burial, which I guess it's, for one is good.
Historically, how many requests have you received in any given 12
weeks? We started tracking that when I came in 2020. And I think to date, if I think off the top of my head, we've maybe had 10, 15.
At the most.
In the 5 years I've been here.
But we do have, if you would like to know for the past years, we do have a spreadsheet for every year, how much we've spent.
Yeah, we started tracking that in 2020, so we can identify specifically who's made requests and whether or not they were approved or denied. To my knowledge, I don't think we've actually approved any of them that have come through, unfortunately.
Most of them, because also we require an interview with the family, and sometimes the family won't call back, and we can try and try, but so, yeah.
Well,
it's a good program for some people, but like I said, sometimes it's difficult because of they're unaware that the family member had a bank account or they had a car. That all we go by the value.
Well,
questions?
No, thank you. We want everyone to have dignity, especially on the time of passing. And it is.
I'm wondering. And probably not, but. I know it's set up pauper cemetery for the indigent or for either. I don't know if that would be qualified. That might be something that the board can look into once that is established.
And I was thinking of that. I think the cost, if you employ a funeral service, that's what the expense probably is going to exceed the $1,500.
Right. We've seen up to $1,650 for a cremation. But it just depends on what the families. But as long as they don't bill us more than $2,500, unfortunately, we can only pay up to $1,500.
Well, you know, for I don't know how much if you get of this, but usually the homeless go straight to the coroner's office and not and back to you guys.
Yeah, no, we don't receive any type of direct request from coroner's office in that regard. So any burial would either be the family coming in on their own accord and filing an application for burial, or a lot of our local funeral homes or mortuaries will work with us to file that application with the family.
Okay, but what's a plot cost?
Like I said, all included with the cremation, and it's they bill us, like I've seen the most I've seen is maybe 17, but
mm-hmm.
not more than two.
I will say when you're talking burial, though, most of our funeral homes are eating the cost of upwards of $25,000 to $4,000, depending on what's been asked of them. Because again, we can only refund that $1,500.
I'm sure one of them's doing it. I'm not sure about two.
At the time that you get that request, is that when the family requests what mortuary they want to use at that time?
Normally, they've already requested what mortuary they're going through, and then the mortuary will reach out to us to work with the family to see if they qualify. Again, to this date, none of the ones that have come to us have we been able to qualify at this point. And there were usually assets that impacted that we couldn't approve that. So, but in the past,
it's just right too. I mean, why if you have assets, and why should the government and county state be paying for it.
Yeah, a lot often too, we get where, like she said, we'll have a family that's already gone through the burial process, and then they find out, so they come in and see if they can apply for reimbursement. But unfortunately, we can't reimburse if they've already done that. So it has to be done while the mortuary is still in the process of billing.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate the update. Commissioners, that's all we have for caseloads, unless anyone online has anything. I know Ms. Marcy was on, and Ms. Garrison is joining us as well.
And we have the reports here, commissioners. Unless you have any specific questions on those five caseloads by program, and if there is no more discussion, I'll entertain a motion to approve those.
Move to approve the caseload by counts.
Second the motion.
Mr. Haas?
Yes.
Mr. Luis Lopez?
Yes.
Mr. Felix Lopez?
Yes. The next one is at the tough one, consideration of contractual agreement, general legal services, Pete Nelson, ESQ.
Pete? Count? Did you say Pete?
Pete, period. Okay. It's that.
I have a question for legal counsel.
Yes.
Do you have the time to devote to both?
I find time. Ms. Nelson and I spend a lot of time on the phone or via email late at night.
I hate to bother her, but I call her too occasionally on Sunday afternoon and she's at a ball game or something.
Well, I'll share some. I'll share this with you. When my dad first met her, my dad was an attorney. Few employees and don't know. He don't brag. He never bragged about other legal counsel, but he sure thought highly of him. Say, this young lady coming out of law school, she's sharp. She's going to do good. She's going to do great for this community. And then I had the honor of hiring her. So probably the best thing we've ever done. So, and you know my dad very well. He didn't pay compliments very much, especially to other attorneys, right, Lori? So for him to do that was pretty big. So we got lucky.
Every time he does that, she turns red.
Yeah. Well, I will say I'm pretty grateful she was already here when I came in, because otherwise I don't know if we would be as a department where we're at.
Well, you didn't let me finish. You were one of our other great hires as well, and along with Mr. Dorenkamp, and that I was able to be a part of, because we don't hire the rest of you guys. We just get the bosses and the war department called Pam Mom over here, because she doesn't let us do much. But
she carries a big stick. We got to watch.
I got the look down.
No allowance here.
Anyway, that's
so, commissioners, I will let you know in front of you is the contract for general legal services to the department. In this, there was a slight adjustment to that contract, and so that is in front of you today. If you have questions, please let me know. And
where did the adjustment occur?
The adjustment's in the rate, Commissioner.
That's under the second whereas.
I see that.
On the very last whereas, I like that CRS 817.5-101, maintaining that that it's off, right?
I read it. I'm double reading it now.
Yes. There he is.
Well, you know, might not have some family coming to work.
That's right. So anyway, any additional discussion on the side? Hearing that, I'll entertain a motion.
Motion to approve the contractual agreement, general legal services for P. Nelson Esquire.
Do you say Pete?
Second the motion.
Yes, Commissioner Haas?
Yes.
Commissioner Luis Lopez?
Yes.
Commissioner Felix Lopez?
Yes. Consider it, and thank you, Madam Counsel, for the work that you do. We appreciate it. Consideration of contractual agreement, child services, legal services, P. Period. Nelson. Back to you, Mr. Eric.
So, Commissioner, by state rule and statute, we are required to have a separate contractual agreement for legal services under child support services. It does not, it's not encumbered under the general legal counsel services provided. Ms. Nelson has been our standing attorney for child support services in the 5 years I've been here and prior to, and in front of you today is a contract. Again, there has been a moderate adjustment to the rate of pay and primarily in the reimbursement of expenses.
Counselor, you have any questions or concerns?
Commissioners, I reviewed these contracts and I have no legal concern.
You drafted this in your sleep. What's this one about? A Snickers bar? Yeah.
Very good. I will entertain a motion.
Move to approve the contractual agreement for child support legal services for Queen Nelson.
Second the motion.
Commissioner Haas?
Yes.
Commissioner Luis Lopez?
Yes.
Commissioner Felix Lopez?
Yes. Thank you again. 6D, consideration of contractual agreement, substitute legal counsel, Caitlin Young, conflict of interest cases. Back to you, sir.
Commissioner, in front of you is a contract. Legal has had an opportunity to review. This is in specific to asking Ms. Young, who is a local attorney, to stand in when there is a conflict of interest in cases for the department as related to Ms. Nelson. And so any of those conflicts, we've had prior attorneys within the community do so, but we are looking to add Ms. Young to that, as I believe some of our local attorneys are planning to either retire or have already retired that we've used in the past. So we would only be engaging services when needed.
And I'm sure you don't encounter that too often.
No, but more often than you would think in a small community, but we do have them. It's not often, but we do need to have somebody in that realm.
For discussion, I'm not familiar with the name. What's the background of this attorney?
Yeah. You know.
She's come to our community recently. She is Mark Young's daughter, who's also a local attorney here.
The name, that's why I
yes. She does RPC work and guardian ad litem work, and she is fairly recently the county attorney in Warfano for their Department of Human Services. So she does similar work, child welfare and child support. So she's knowledgeable in this area.
Thank you.
Commissioners, other questions, concerns?
No questions, so we'll entertain a motion.
Motion to approve the contractual agreement, substitute legal counsel, Caitlin Young, conflict of interest cases.
Second the motion.
Commissioner Haas?
Yes.
Commissioner Luis Lopez?
Yes.
Commissioner Felix Lopez?
Yes. Consideration of lease agreement, Colorado Workforce Center, Trinidad. Back to you, sir.
Commissioners, at the beginning or the end of last year, we entered into a lease agreement for an office space down at the Colorado Workforce Center. We'd like to continue that. The lease in front of you is the 2023 lease agreement that was provided. I did confirm with the state agent that the language has not changed nor will change in the 2024-25 contract, but that the rate of increase, which we anticipated last year when we approved this, there was a five-year increase mark on that. And that increase for the schedule of cost is included in your packet. So again, we would like to maintain that. That's for our workforce development coordinator for our TANF programming in Colorado Works, and she has been down there, and I will say that her presence down there at the workforce has been invaluable to both that agency as along with our courts, because she works with our child support group along with our TANF, and she's been very successful in getting some of our folks back into the workforce as well as getting some of our folks their GEDs. We have one who's actually taking his last test this week for his GED, and so we're excited to see that partnership continue and grow.
Very good. Even though this is drafted by the state council, have you had an opportunity to review this?
I have. I have no legal concerns.
Thank you.
I see some few strikes in the contract. I guess those were amended by us. Item number two.
Yeah, we identified those in the last lease. Okay. So those were items that were.
And something on the HVAC for the heat.
Yeah. Like that. Okay.
Thank you.
And so I would also presume that the city, that your agency's pleased and satisfied with the services that you get it from.
Yes, oh yes.
All right, any other questions, commissioners? I'll entertain a motion.
Move to approve the lease agreement covering Workforce Center Trimble.
Second the motion.
Commissioner Haas?
Yes.
Commissioner Luis Lopez?
Yes.
Commissioner Felix Lopez?
Yes. Thank you. Discussion of letter of support, RECCCAP funding crisis. Back to you, sir.
So, Commissioner, I just wanted to give an opportunity if there were additional discussions regarding the CCAP program. Additional to that, I would ask the board to consider if I need to either call a special session, special meeting, or in next month's meeting to identify a letter of support on behalf of the county commissioners, depending on the outcome of both the JVC and our meetings with Representative Winter. To help support our department and our efforts to try and identify a fix for the CCAP funding concern. So again, I put it as a discussion item. If there is a direction from the board regarding that letter of support, then I'll be glad to get that drafted into you all so that we can move forward with some kind of communication to the state as well from the county.
I am serving in office till the 14th until Mr. Lucero is sworn in. I would recommend, yes, you do it. Because it doesn't look good with, you know, $1.4 billion in deficits. I don't think the JVC is going to be able to handle this without some of these influences coming to them. And if you start getting those letters now to them, you might have a better chance. I don't know if you need to call a special session for that. You can probably just do it through through polling and stuff. So, and then revisit it at the next December or January 17th or 21st meeting.
Okay.
And then that current board can go ahead and move forward. But I would recommend, and Chairman, I'm out of line here, move forward with it, and the chairman can sign off on a letter and it could be visited at that time.
Okay. I think the other piece will be that I will be, once we have dates and times scheduled for Representative Winter's meetings with CDEC, if the commissioners would like to attend and kind of rotate in those meetings, because I anticipate there may be several meetings with each of the different respective programs. So I'll make sure to include you on those invitations so that you can be part of that discussion with Representative Winter at the table as well, because his plan has been already partially executed in speaking to some of the JVC members based off of the letter that I sent to them.
And not having the time to execute something to the agenda for today, being yesterday's meeting.
Right.
It is proper because regardless of the outcome of the JVC, we need to let them know. If they do subsequent funding, that's great. But if they don't meet all the fiduciary mandates, then we need to let them know. So let's be ready to draft the letter and have it ready for. I know we have a pretty good attorney and a good director. You guys can put a pen. A document together, and I think we can bring it back for a board consideration at the next meeting. And earlier, if you need it, we can call a special meeting as well.
Okay.
Before the exit of Commissioner Ruiz Lopez.
Okay. So
I think you keep an eye and see when the letter would be more impactful.
I think it will also be important for us to have a better understanding of, from a legal perspective, what the rule actually protects counties to what extent before the commissioners put forth that letter, because I feel like the request to the JVC has already been made. And just so that the commissioners are aware, the language that I used in the request regarding the funding move from UPK, that is consistent with what other counties have or are sending to the JVC at this point. So that same ask is being asked from several counties.
Sure.
So that language has been consistent. The first part of that letter is mine. Solely, but that portion is what all of the counties, to my understanding, are requesting of the JVC to consider at this point. But I think the letters of concern from the commissioners really should be focused around if there are legality concerns, what is the county looking at asking the state for in order to come to resolution with this. So I think that's the results of the JVC and that are going to be what drive the content of that letter moving forward.
And I'd like to have an official motion on it so we have the authority to move forward.
Okay.
So I will entertain a motion.
Legal, would that be a motion to table for review? Since it was just a discussion, there's no letter for consideration.
I think,
or do we even have to?
It's just discussion, so you don't table it. You yeah, just okay. discussed it. There was no consideration, so you don't need a motion.
Okay,
so we're good on that.
Okay. All right. All right, financial matters. Consideration of financials and bills for October 2024.
Commissioners, in front of you are financials for and bills for October of 24. You do have your summation of the federal and state reimbursements, as well as the treasurer's reconciliation and your share report. Are there any questions or concerns on the financials?
I like that word, reconciliation.
And I have to give props to Ms. Eklund, who has been standing in as our interim. She has taken the bull by the horns, let me tell you, and she's done some amazing work already in there in getting our financials up to par. So I'm really impressed, and we're grateful for her getting Good in job. There. And she's not afraid of anything. So I have to give her props, and Ms. Christie as well, for stepping into the role as interim supervisor for her child support division. And they've both just done an amazing job in this transition.
Well,
so
thank you.
Small but mighty. I got a question for you. So Armstrong Consultants, remind me what that's about. $1,022,000.
That's the airport. You're on the right.
Am I on the right one?
I was like, I don't know if an Armstrong. I'm like, a million somewhere in that country.
So I'm the same. There you are. And look. How did that happen?
Looks like.
And I'm going, what?
Yeah, you filled up the wrong
thing. Oh, yes, it is. It is on under check report vendor 3160, Armstrong Consultants, payment date. October 30th, 2024, 1,022,407. And the account number is 47345.
What page number are you on?
147.
Yeah. I'm actually on 146.
Yeah, it's free.
We've been training Chris.
Yeah. I wonder if she coded it to.
Oh, no, that's different font. So the font, what they did, they injected Los Angeles County font check report. You can see it right here because we don't have half of these people. They don't go. You guys don't go to Big R, do you?
Well, actually, Keith Woodring. Yeah. And Nick
so what happened was when we ran our check report, it must be something either with.
He picked up the counties.
It picked up the counties as well, and we didn't catch it till just now.
You're safe.
Good question, right?
No clue.
Yeah, because there's someone here now, and I'm like,
yeah. See the font? It's intermingled into our packet. I don't know why.
See, and on the reports for CDHS, yeah, it actually has DHS Bank.
It actually starts on page 145. So the check report starts on page 145. Yeah, I started to see.
And we're
Nick Lingus and Keith Woodring and Mark.
But then you get to the bottom at 165, then you have the 114,951.38 for 11/15. So that's accurate.
So it could be on the AP because the county is, Ms. Paula, what is the county? Are you one or two?
One.
You're one, we're two. So if it was entered as an AP under two by accident, that's why it's pulling on our report.
Okay,
so
it shouldn't be able to do that because I know I've gone through and entered. Say, Michael, was November. I've gone through, we have one. But when I get to put my phone in to charge it to, it'll have a red dot.
Unless when she ran it for both and didn't realize it.
But see, I was like, what did you use Trinidad Animal Planning for?
Well.
The question, though. See, all of these foreign first state farm in our valley, those are
years.
So I think just work out the detail on the one for DHS. It has a DHS bank directly, so they're coded.
and the ones that we were making reference to are not. So those are directly from the payables of the county.
Yeah, we'll look at that and see why that did that. Okay.
So the bottom line, right? 2 million 3.
Yeah, go up, but...
Well, that's the thing.
So table one?
I think so.
Yeah, I think we're gonna use the table financials to clarify that.
All of them.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because see your bottom line now it's impacted the balance total.
Yep. 2.3.
It's impacted by the addition of
Yeah, because I don't think our total vendors for the month would even come close to that 2 million. That's extremely high.
Okay.
And didn't see that number when I pulled that report.
Right.
That's legit.
However, on the exactly, let me show you this right here. On the Mr. I wish I can put this up. The on the departments, we do have administration. Somehow these totals are correct, but the grand total includes the larger amount. So I think let's take a look at that, and I'd rather table all three items. Okay.
Yep.
If
so, moved.
Second the motion.
Mr. Haas.
Yes.
Mr. Luis Lopez?
Yes.
Mr. Felix Lopez?
Yes.
See, I do pay attention sometimes.
Only when it's $1 million.
It's not now, so I do know too.
Yeah,
that's
so, all. We're going to go to the next section, executive session. The board will meet in executive session under CRS 246-402-4B. Conferring with the county attorney for the purpose of receiving legal advice on specific legal questions. Item one is community member services. So at this time, I will entertain a motion to suspend this regular Board of County Commissioners acting on the capacity as the Board of Human Services and enter into executive session.
So moved.
Second the motion.
Mr. Haas?
Yes.
Mr. Luis Lopez?
Yes.
Mr. Felix Lopez?
Yes. So we have time for a small recess if anybody needs a